everybody. It's Mike Jeff for Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. I'm pleased to have on the phone today Rez Abbasi. He's going to be coming in town and performing a couple of concerts here with harpist Isabel Olivier, and they're going to be performing Sunday, 1 p.m. They're going to be doing a master class at the Bloom School of Jazz, and then also they're going to be performing as a duo that day. And then Wednesday, October 23rd, they're going to be at the Old Town School of Folk, 8:30 p.m. And Rez, I'm curious because I know that you're coming into town. Of course, all the information I should mention is at bloomschoolofjazz.com, oldtownschoolofolk.org, and of course, reztone.com for all of the dates and all the information on all of the recordings Rez has out. I think he's got 14, and I think number 15 and 16 are coming out very shortly. So Rez, I know you've been traveling. I know we talked a little bit before we jumped on. You just came back from Paris. You were playing in San Diego before that. Looking over your schedule, you guys are heading out to Washington, D.C. You're going to be doing New York. So it's pretty exciting that you're going to be coming into Chicago here for two different hits coming up this weekend. I guess my question to you, just to kind of kick it all off, is let's talk a little bit about this group and this unique pairing, I think, between you and the French harpist Isabel Olivier.
Yeah, Isabel actually lives in partly in Chicago and partly in Paris. So she's actually there. She's flying in today.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's not like I'm bringing her, but she pretty much has the territory of Chicago covered, and I do New York and some other places. But we established our contact many years ago. I think simply because we were on this, the same label, Enja.
Okay.
She's on one called Enja Yellow Bird, and I'm on Enja. So, you know, we sort of exchanged records based on that, and then she came to some gigs, and we all just thought it would be interesting to have these two stringed instruments that were culturally unique and diverse and texturally very different from each other, yet had this sort of similarity in essence because of the strings and the plucking of the strings and all that. So we always thought that would be an interesting combination. And we applied for this commission, this grant from the French Cultural Exchange, French American Cultural Exchange Program.
Okay.
FACE. Yeah. And so we received that, and that was sort of the galvanization of this project once we had the funding together, obviously, because, you know, you can't do it without the funding.
No, exactly.
So, so we started just exchanging ideas over the phone, this and that, you know, sending each other clips. We've already heard each other's records. So, in our imagination, it already worked, right? So mm-hmm. It was sort of this kind of thing that we just have to make it come to fruition, and how do we do that, basically? So we finally decided to do a couple of concerts in New York. I wrote a few new things. She wrote a few new things. And after doing a couple of duo concerts or playing in duo, I just came up with the idea that it might be nice to have a tabla player, you know, because I've been playing with tabla, some Indian drum, right? Mm-hmm. Classical drum. But I've been playing on and off with tabla players for years, also my wife's band. So she was like, yeah, fascinated by that. Again, here's another instrument that's sort of off cuff, off beaten path, and you know, combining it with these, you know, sort of this trying to create one sound based on three very different cultural instruments. And then, of course, drums, you know, that's the jazz in me and in her, you know. We're like, drums would be great. So we went from duo to quartet, essentially, and figured out how to, you know, incorporate everybody and feature everybody, and at the same time sort of make a cohesive statement with the sort of diversity within our own compositions, because we write very differently.
Well, that was one of the things I was going to bring up. But since you brought up the drums, too, I mean, you know, compositionally, let's talk about that, and then we'll delve into the drums. Since I'm a percussionist drummer, I'm going to delve into the drums.
Yeah, yeah.
And since you awesome. Have a tabla player and a drummer on this recording, I already like the recording, yeah. even though I haven't heard that much of it. So, you know. But my thought is that, I mean, you're coming from one side, she's coming from another as far as compositionally, but... you know, you can speak to this way better than I can, obviously, but it seems to me like with a guitar there and a harp, there's an opportunity there to either have there be too many strings, too many things happening at once, or one has to create so much texture, the other has to play off of it. And talk a little bit about the compositional aspects of even writing for something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true, what you just said, and coming, obviously, if you didn't tell me you were a musician, I would know you are, because the way you spoke right there, it's definitely, you know, the idea of space, you know, or silence, or well, I would say space, in fact, is something that most people who are not musicians don't think about. So, I'm used to playing with, I can't speak for Isabel, but I'm used to playing with a lot of people who, you know, sort of play a lot, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, they really, they know what they want to say, they say it, you know, and as an accompanist, I do my best to sort of weave around that. But as a soloist, I expect the same from other people. And, I think we almost got lucky because we never talked about this subject. It just kind of happened. And, you know, sometimes, of course, there are areas within the compositions and improvisations that are, you know, heavier texturally than other times. But that's a give and take, and that's dynamics, and you know, that's tension and release, and all that plays into the music, no matter what kind of instruments that are playing, whether it be, you know, 50 strings at one time, or, you know, I mean. Really, piano is kind of a stringed instrument too, in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, when I play the piano, it's the same kind of thing. It's you know, we have to just feed off of literally the space that's in between everything that we're playing. And it worked out well. Now, you know, that's not just a given. I mean, it could have easily been possible that, you know, we weren't sensitive to each other, and it just sounds like a bunch of, you know,
yeah.
walking on top of each other too, right? But mm-hmm. in this particular case, there's a sensibility between us plus the musicians we use, you know, as percussionists, and that's why we choose them. I think that's in a nutshell what.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, you know, and talking about the musicians now, you know, when you're adding in drums, usually there's a bass player involved, but I know with a harp player, and I think she uses some different electronics too, right? So, I mean, is there
yeah.
a sense of like kind of like a bass line throughout because of what she's creating while she's playing the harp in order to include that? Or because there's a tabla player, you don't necessarily need to worry as much about having a bass to lay down something underneath what you guys are doing?
Well, that's very interesting. It's a balance. Like there is no bass particularly, right? I mean, like, it's sort of like I never asked her to play the bass. She never asked me to play the bass. But within the compositions, you know, there might be, obviously, there's a root motion going on that, you know, we're depending on in terms of harmonic sequences and all that stuff. But it's interesting because it comes naturally to me at this point not to necessarily have a bass player. Because of my experience with the saxophone player Rudresh Mahantapa. I don't know if, mm-hmm. I mean, he was a Chicago guy for a while, and he's been in New York now. But there's a few bands of his that I was in, and particularly one called Indo-Pac Coalition, that there never is a bass. So, and there was never a bass. So it's a matter of less of a role-playing attitude and more of a an attitude of textural cohesion. So if in fact I'm missing the low end at one point, if the drummer's not bashing the bass drum or the tabla player's not you know, going for a bottom thing on his or her drum. Then I may inject a bass in there just as a textural feel, but it's not a bass line particularly.
Got it.
Although there are bass lines that come in and out, but just like Regression Band, it's sort of like, you know, I mean, it's funny, just a little off, but since you're a drummer, I'll tell you a story. But we were opening it for Jack DeJohnette's band a few years ago, and afterwards, you know, I came up to Jack, and I was a little embarrassed. Hey, Jack, you know, I'm a big obviously, and he said, and he's like, oh, it sounded great, you know, hey, you know, that was a wonderful set. And of course, me being, like, bass-centric, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, it's really, yeah, thanks, Jack, you know, I'm really trying to, like, you know, keep the bass going and also, you know, play and all. It's not an easy task for me, but I'm glad you enjoyed it. And he just nailed me. He's like, oh, man, no, don't worry about the bass. I mean, you guys got three instruments. You know, Dan Weiss is the drummer. He was like, Dan's got the bass drum. And, you know, he's like, beautiful. Don't even think like that, you know. And so after he said that, I was like, oh, man, I wish I met you 10 years ago when you told me that. Because, you know,
right.
That's when the band started, like 15 years ago. So, It's sort of, you know, taking that paradigm and shifting it to the point that you know, it's you're not thinking in terms of bass, but you're hearing just the, you know, bass frequency whenever it needs to come up.
So right.
That's a long answer to the short yeah. question.
No, that, I mean, that was great. And that makes a whole lot of sense. And I think that, you know, what you bring up, I mean, because I never really thought of it that way. And actually what Jack DeJohnette just said, too. But, I mean, what you bring up, I mean, with the way the music is and the way the textures lay in, you know, a lot of times you don't need the bass because it is happening. You're doing something, she's doing something, the drums are doing stuff, which I never really thought about that being able to lay down such a foundation. But when you bring it up the way you discuss, I think it makes a lot of sense. So
Yeah, it does. I mean, like I said, sometimes it makes more sense than others. I mean, sometimes, yes, on the other side of the coin, if I've been playing with bass players all month and then suddenly I'm in a band that doesn't have no bass, then I get a little bit like, oh, you know, I have to get used to, I acclimate myself to not hearing that bottom all the time, you know.
It's a whole different way of grooving, too. And, I mean, some people can handle it and some people can't. So, obviously, you can handle it, you know, but, I mean, It definitely changes everything, but I think it also, the way you just said it too, it's kind of like a mind shift. You have to say, okay, wait a minute. And if you're playing with the right people and everybody's got that same frame of mind, it's going to really happen anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to couple that with experiences I had when I was younger, I saw Paul Motion's band with Bill Frisell and Lovano, Joe Lovano. And that was such a great experience too. That was like, maybe the first band I've ever heard that didn't have a bass player. And I never missed a bass in that. So yeah. I just kind of reflect on that and think, well, you know, of course, those, you know, Bill Frisell, all those guys are, you know, they are who they are, but we won't go there. But it's a matter of just like, okay, well, they played simplistically to some degree and it was musical. And that's really kind of the bottom line, you know.
Well, that's,
start from there.
It's almost, yeah, I mean, it's like what the whole point of playing music is to make it musical. Wait a minute. What a concept.
Yeah. I know. We miss that sometimes.
I know. Trust me. I know. So everybody can check out, and I want to make sure I keep plugging this here. So Rez is going to be in town, and he's going to be performing and doing let's talk a little bit about this master class, because that's pretty exciting, over at the Bloom School, October 20th. It starts at 1 p.m., and, of course, that's Bloom School, 226 South Wabash Avenue, Suite 700. I know that you have information on your website, and I know BloomSchoolJazz.com has information on their website about the masterclass.
Right.
And so let's talk a little bit about the masterclass, and then you guys will be playing together as well. But what can people expect to hear? So if they're coming in, if there's guitar players, or I mean, I don't know how many harpists are going to be coming to the masterclass, but
I'm sure
you're going to be talking about composition aspects and how to perform in different positions and things like that. So why don't you talk a little bit about what people can expect to experience at the masterclass on October 20th?
Yeah, I mean, Isabel and I have not really done master classes together, but I'm I'm eager and looking forward to it. You know, we're going to be doing duo on Sunday, the 20th, as opposed to the trio with Ernie Adams on the 23rd at the old school. That is the 23rd. Yeah, 20. Okay. Right. I don't have the calendar in front of me. Thank you. So we're going to run, you know, play through a couple tunes. And of course, the way I like to start classes is to sort of ask what's on people's minds rather than sort of just tell them what's on my mind.
Right.
And from there, it stares in the direction of the moment rather than like an agenda. Because everybody has different ideas and different thoughts and different questions. And then we're playing a concert that afternoon also, probably an hour long or something. And I'm sure David Bloom is going to have some, you know, the master class some questions also, because he's a wonderful guitar player and he's kind of renowned out there, as I hear.
I was going to say, David will probably have plenty of questions for you to begin with anyways, because knowing David, I mean, he thinks of music very similarly what you're talking about as well. So I think you guys are going to have a really good conversation. And if...
Well, yeah, absolutely.
You know, if...
Yeah, I mean...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry. Oh, no, he came to one of our initial concerts, the duo, and he really enjoyed that. We talked for a long time afterwards. So that was... you know, 4 months ago or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, anybody going to this masterclass is going to get a whole heck of a lot of stuff. Plus, you know, a little plug for the Bloom School. I mean, if you're not familiar with the Bloom School, it's really an intimate space. He's got a very great space there. And it's all about improvisation at the Bloom School, getting technique, learning tunes. But it's also about expanding and trying to expand the way you improvise. So if you attend the Bloom School in general, that's what you're going to get. So at a master class like this, and David's going to be there, he's going to be talking with Rez and Isabel about a lot of things. So I think that even if you're, you know, kind of on the fence about playing, or if you're a beginner, I think you're going to get a lot out of it. So that's going to be at 1 p.m. October 20th at the Bloom School, bloomschoolofjazz.com. I know they have information on there, but then you're also doing a concert October 23rd, Wednesday, at the Old Town School of Folk, and it's a free concert, which is exciting, and it's with Ernie Adams.
Yes, and I've never played with Ernie, but I've heard great things from other people about him. Sorry, I'm in New York, so you're hearing this right now.
No, that's fine. Hey, don't worry about it. Trust me.
The ambulance, whatever it is. No. I'm looking forward to that. And, that's going to be a trio, and it's going to be fun with, you know, since he's so wonderful. And so we're looking forward to that. We're going to run through the whole repertoire there as well.
Mm-hmm. So you're going to be playing more tunes probably from the new recording Oasis, I would imagine, with Ernie and yourself and Isabel at the Old Town School. I'm sure you'll do some with the Bloom, but Old Town School is such a great spot to hear people play and perform. It's a really nice showcase. Yeah. It's a great theater. Have you been there before?
I played there with my wife's band. Her name is Kieran Aluwalia. She's an Indian vocalist who composes, you know, her own music. I arrange it all. And she's influenced by West African music and some jazz and blues also. So we played there and it's I think maybe twice in fact, and it's a really great place. Yeah, beautiful.
Oh yeah.
I'm looking forward to both actually, you know. I mean, it will be two sort of different things going on, but they're both, you know, equal.
Yeah, well, and people could actually go to both. Hey.
Yeah. What do you know?
So now let's steer everybody just so that they can keep up to date, because I'd love to have you back on so that we can talk specifically about you, because obviously everything that you've done, I mean, you've performed all over the world. You've recorded, I think, 14 recordings. Maybe this is the 15th recording, I think. But I mean, you have
14. Well, the 15th is coming out 2020.
Oh, great. Okay. That's perfect. And I mean, the style, I mean, you know, I love your music. I mean, it's kind of like that fusion bass jazz stuff. I mean, it's very contemporary. It's got a lot of twists and turns in it. I don't know how often you play in Chicago just with your own group. Have you been through Chicago recently?
Not with my own group. You know, it's strange because for a while I was doing a lot of stuff with my groups and less Sidemen, but it kind of took a turn. Of course, the one with Isabella, that is a collaboration, so I guess you can call it one of my own groups. But I've been doing the Sidemen thing, and then not really that interested in playing, you know, with my own groups that much, although I have a couple of new ones that I wouldn't mind, you know, hitting up some places. So, yeah, I might. I mean, you know, it's not easy going on the road, I have to say, without being a, you know, mega star, or without, you know, without having some kind of funding, you know, these two things really help, you know, bring out people and book better shows and all that stuff. So if you're sort of just above the radar or something like that, which I feel like I am, or if you're under the radar, it becomes really difficult to, like, especially these days, to bring a band out and pay for airfares and hotels and all that, and then play a place that, you know, that holds 60 people or 80 people. You know how it is. I mean, you know how it is. So
I know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, that they. I always hear from people just, you know, running Chicago Jazz Magazine. Oh, why doesn't this guy ever come to town? Or why doesn't that guy ever come to town? Well, you know, I mean, it sounds like a great idea, but I mean, you're talking about really, it's a big undertaking to do something, especially even just putting out a recording these days is a big undertaking. And then taking it out and getting it out on the road is another huge, massive undertaking, you know?
Well, exactly. Yeah, totally. And, you know, I mean, all that streaming stuff, I mean, that doesn't help. I mean, they say, you know, if you're not on Spotify, you're losing this whole audience. Well, okay, but, you know, there's, you're not selling any records any longer. You bring records, you know, CDs, I would say. You bring them to the gigs, and, you know, only a few people buy them because they'll just listen to them on Spotify and Apple Music and all these things. So it's a catch-22. I mean, it's, sure, it gets the music out there, but it makes people a little lazy too, because there's so much to pick from and choose from, like the lists, you know, the playlists, and, you know, they're not really involved with listening to a particular artist. It's more like just sort of put on the playlist and let the thing shuffle by itself and not even know whose music it is. So, I mean, that's a tangent a little bit, but
no, hey, you're preaching to the choir, you know, I get it.
Yeah, so you know, it's that whole thing makes life a little bit more difficult as a musician, because we're investing all this money into our CDs or into our recordings, let's say, even if they're just digital, and the feedback in terms of monetarial feedback is really not what it used to be, and it never was that great in the first place. So imagine. Right.
No, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing. And, you know, you and I could probably talk for 2 hours about distribution and everything else. But, you know, I think you're right on track, too. And it's interesting you brought that up. But, I mean, just as far as, like, you know, I hear from artists, I mean, they're going to record an album. And I don't know many people that actually buy the whole album and listen to it from start to finish like it's, like, you know, presented, because like what you said, it's on a shuffle, it's on a playlist, they're picking it up off of Spotify, they're hearing a tune here, exactly, a tune there, you know. So but exactly. Then I always say, hey, the best way to hear the whole album and really understand the artist is go see them live. What a there's another great idea.
Yeah, no, definitely, because the studio can only capture a certain amount, right? I mean, you're capturing a certain, we just played in Paris with this group, and with the same group, in fact, that was on the record, Prabhu Edward on tabla and David Pacha, yeah, on drums. So that was, and we went off into really other worlds, you know, like different tangents and stuff. And I was like, wow, that would have been interesting if we captured that on the record, but we captured something else on the record. So it's the live situation is very different. You can listen to records over and over again and hear the same thing, but then live you'll hear you know, stuff that's different every night.
Yeah, and I always tell people too, it's like, you know, you cannot, you can watch YouTube, you can listen to things and everything else, but you cannot recreate the vibrations of the music, the timbre of the music, what's happening in the moment, unless you go somewhere and hear somebody perform live, and especially in an intimate club like you guys are going to be here in Chicago. I mean, that you're not going to pick that up unless you go see something live. You're not going to get that experience anywhere else.
Yeah, exactly. And you can come and say hello.
There you go. Hey, you
know, it's you know, it's always fun to meet people afterwards or before, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So let me get the plugs in one more time. So of course,
Thank you.
Oh yeah, no, it's Rez Abbasi and harpist Isabel Olivier. They're going to be performing October 20th, 1 p.m. They're doing a master class and a duo concert. That's at Bloom School of Jazz. It's 226 South Wabash Avenue, Suite 700, bloomschoolofjazz.com. By the way, David has parking for like $10, so make sure that when you're getting your tickets or inquiring at the school, you ask him about that, because they have a lot available right there, so that's kind of cool. And then, of course, at the Old Town School of Folk, right up there, 4544 North Lincoln Avenue. It's a free concert because it's part of their World Music Wednesdays, and it's 8:30 p.m., and drummer Ernie Adams will be joining the duo, and that's going to be exciting too. And all the information is at oldtownschoolofolk.org. And Rez, thanks so much for jumping on. I know you had a busy travel a couple of days here, but I'm glad we could talk a little bit ahead of you coming into Chicago this weekend.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. And hopefully if we see each other, that'd be great. If you can make it, then if not, we'll definitely chat up another time.
Definitely.
If you come to New York, please say hello.
I will. I will. And I appreciate you hopping on here. And, of course, everybody can get more information at ChicagoJazz.com, ChicagoJazzMagazine.com, and you can subscribe to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience on every podcasting platform that you enjoy listening to podcasts. So till next time, I appreciate everyone listening, and hopefully I will see you somewhere out on the scene.